Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Ches B'mal Cheshvan, Parashas Lech Lecha, Tavshinayin Zion, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 8 November 2016, webcasting from Israel. Like many countries, I'm sure today, focused on the United States election. The newspapers here this morning were nothing but articles on the elections. I felt no need to read them. Israeli analysts have little to teach Americans in Israel about America. The Jerusalem Post was one pro-Hillary piece after another. One was devoted to American Jews who, if Trump is elected, will consider Aliyah, moving to Israel. Like their idols, the Hollywood celebrities who say they will go into exile if Trump is elected. This is a new one on why people make Aliyah. It is simultaneously frightening and fascinating to read the fantasy distortions of Donald Trump in the pro-Hillary community. As usual, I mentioned it the last webcast, their hostility to him is basically a reaction to a racist bigot. That's what they see, said one 22-year-old Jew with a splendid Gentile first name, Nicholas, in Cincinnati, saying, "I don't think I can live through 4 years of Trump's America, the mainstreaming of racism and bigotry." Anti-Semitism is also coming out of the woodwork, to which he, of course, attributed to Trump's followers. Apparently what the House of Clinton has done is rile up the Latino community as well to see in Trump a racist hater of Latinos. So Hillary is expecting a big turnout of them, and I will not be surprised if she wins, because I fear there are just too many third world types in the country now with little feel for democracy. For example, maybe you saw that video clip of Obama the other day interviewed by a Mexican-American reporter, speaking perfect English, probably born here. She asked a question inside of which was a statement that Obama ignored and thus came off in his response seeming to encourage illegal aliens to go and vote. And nothing will happen to them. It's not quite right if you listen to the interchange carefully. His critics are wrong. He did, though, not do something that he should have. In her question, the oh-so-liberal pro-Mexican illegal alien journalist said that, in her opinion, because they're here and contribute, they are citizens in her mind. That is what Obama did not react to and tell her that in order to vote, one must be a citizen. No two ways about it. Tell her that in the United States, society plays by the rules, and it's not for her to decide who is or is not a citizen. Good intentions do not override U.S. law. Here is this attitude. Hers is the attitude of the liberal for whom feelings are the seat of all wisdom and truth. Like Hillary, who has been a compulsive, chronic violator of laws all her life, as if they did not apply to her. She has always been out to win, and in the long term, that would be good for society. She probably rationalizes because she has such good intentions. The West, because it is a degenerate West these days, losing its religion with nothing to replace it, it has produced a withered left side in society that has become like a cancerous limb. A healthy liberal democracy needs both camps to be healthy, to keep each other honest, challenge each other's assumptions, compete. Competition always produces superior results. Each opposition must point out the flaws in the other side. Today, though, the left, the liberals, are brainless. They're narcissistic puddles of emotion. The idea that Donald Trump somehow suffers from a bigoted view of Latinos is not of this world. He wants to stop the invasion from Mexico because it is, in the long run, detrimental to the country. The country will suffer for a variety of reasons that have nothing to do with the color of anyone's skin. For years now, I know from an erstwhile DPP subscriber in Phoenix, that city's hospitals and schools are bulging with illegal aliens, illegal school children, and patients who use the emergency rooms as their freebie HMO. The city infrastructure, the city budget, buckles under such strain. And in a time of serious unemployment, tolerating this invasion is a crime against the American worker. for the sake of the Liberals' own self-image, feeling good about themselves, they make others suffer. I hope you heard the latest news, 2 days ago, I think it was, from the latest WikiLeaks dump, how Hill and Bill created the Clinton Foundation as a charity to help poor people. They themselves have almost $1 million, but when it came to paying for Chelsea's wedding, they had the Clinton Foundation foot the bill. They solicit funds from others under the guise of charity and then pocket the money for themselves, these almost billionaires. These people are not only criminals, they're sick in the head about money. And they've always been like that, rumor has it. They never pay for anything if they can get away with it. And that any Americans are in favor of putting this woman in the Oval Office with her proven sex offender husband back in the White House, that leaves yours truly speechless. Her separate email server was a major crime in itself. No one disputes her classified communications were open to the world, and she still has a following. Are these people brain dead or something? Is it so important to have a woman president, a female president, that all other considerations of aptitude and character fly out the window? She's like Yasser Arafat, in that there was nothing he could do to have his role as moderate Jew killer, desirous of peace, besmirched. Versus the extremists and all those other organizations. That was utter nonsense. There's an image problem here in the worst sense. We're talking about idolatry. It was an image of Arafat, an idol that world anti-Jewry, Gentiles and Jews alike, created and clung to, despite all evidence to the contrary, that this was a major international murderer, anti-Semite, Nazi lover, degenerate. Support for the Palestinians in every country in the world has always been a way of tolerating this generation's cohort of Jew killers. Every generation has them. And there has been nothing Hillary could do to disappoint her supporters. This woman was sacked by the House Judiciary Committee 40 years ago, right out of law school, Yale Law School, where she was valedictorian, a top student. But when it came to practicing law, she exposed herself as having no respect for the law. The law was something to be manipulated, avoided, fooled. The late New York Times resident conservative opinionator William Safire, 20 years ago, called her a congenital liar, and boy, was he on target. I think it's like some kind of lying with her, some kind of Tourette's syndrome she has no control over. She has no control of her speech. Everything that comes out of her mouth can be a lie. It's a variation of her disrespect for the law, which is why she was fired then. Her lies are aggressions against the truth. And they come out in the knowledge she will never have to account for them. She has gotten a pass every time. Why? She's also like Obama, who also says things he does not believe in order to get his way. I mentioned before, I saw him the first time. I thought he did not believe a word he was saying, but spoke as he did because it would be pleasing to the audience. He told the audience what they wanted to hear. I've lost track of the times he, in 8 years, spoke of the unbreakable, unshakable bond with Israel. While off camera, he was sharpening his dagger to plunge it into Jewish backs with the Iran deal. This election has also revealed the continuing descent into oblivion of the American Jews who support Hillary, because they are liberals first. If you can believe it, Alan Dershowitz has supported her as he supported Obama. This is typical for a veteran IBJ and inside the Beltway Jew like himself. This woman's a mental case. And should she become the President of the United States, God help us. She's not only done nothing to prove her worth as a leader of the nation, she has proven herself to be guilty of raping women as an accessory after the fact, and continuing the terror of her husband's victims after the fact. I think it's very, very wrong with a society that cannot accept the truth about this woman and her husband and their foundation. What is the urgency of having a female president that overrides all these other considerations? Like that Chicana journalist thumbing her nose at America's immigration law. So Hillary has been a serial violator, critical enemy of American law, this valedictorian at Yale Law School. I fear there is something significant, national meaning in this fact that this iconic feminist champion lawyer has in effect repeatedly all her life given American law the bird.
אני קיים, נותן חיוך אל העולם. אני שמח שאני חי, אני מאושר שאני קיים. אני פורס ידיי אל על לאבא שיושב מעל. אני שמח שאני חי, אני מאושר שאני קיים. חוזר בתשובה, חוזר לכאן, כי מכאן כבר אין לי לאן. חוזר לאבא שמבקש, חזור בני ואל תתבייש. חוזר בתשובה, חוזר לכאן, כי מכאן כבר אין לי לאן. חוזר שמבקש, חזור בני ואל תתבייש. אין ייאוש בעולם כלל, כך אמר רבי נחמן. תפוס מזוודה, סע לאומן, ראש השנה אצל רבי נחמן.
If Hillary wins, there's a reasonable expectation that her health may decline, and her vice president, currently Senator Tim Kaine, would become president. Of course, the pro-Hillary liberal Jews don't care about that. They don't care that Kaine is a standout among politicians for his anti-Israelism. Caroline Glick in the Post today listed some of his behaviors. First off, his biggest financial backer is J Street, the anti-Israel Jewish cult of anti-Jew Jews funded by George Soros, the Nazi collaborating Jew. When Netanyahu in March 2015 addressed Congress to protest Obama's knife in the back in the form of his Iran deal, 9 Democratic senators walked out and Kane was one of them. The year before, in June 2014, a bipartisan letter went to Obama from Congress opposed to continued funding of the PA because it had just signed an agreement with Hamas. 12 senators refused to sign. Kane was one of them. But then again, these Americans of Jewish extraction who do not live Jewish lives don't care about that. They support Hillary, the idol they worship, regardless of her own merits and major demerits, and his. And I think it's no coincidence that in the last days of the campaign, Hillary recruited entertainers. Beyonce and sore-mouthed husband rapper Jay-Z and John Bon Jovi, all of whom are themselves idols worshipped by Americans these days. By contrast, before the 20th century and the invention of movies and television, you know, who American youth looked up to? Real human beings with real accomplishments. Starting with George Washington, an amazing human being. Not only was he the richest man in America, he was arguably the bravest in battle, and physically one of the strongest. And unlike Hillary, he could not tell a lie. Americans looked up to settlers, pioneers, settling the wilderness. Daniel Boone, Davy Crockett. Stephen Decatur Jr., who fought the Muslims hand-to-hand off Tripoli, Libya in the year 1804. In the War of 1812, he was victorious against the Brits at sea in sea battles, and in 1815 returned to the north coast of Africa, and by his very reputation forced the Algerines to call off their depredations. He was quite a guy. He died in a duel of honor with another naval officer. The exploits of the United States Navy and its officers in the first decades of the Republic became the stuff of legend. American youth looked up to Abraham Lincoln. They looked up to Teddy Roosevelt, who looked up to the officers in the Navy in the century before him. They looked up to Thomas Edison, and so on and so forth, with nary one popular entertainer among them as an idol. There were no movie stars to idolize, no rock musicians, and one can only wonder how many Americans voted today for Hillary Clinton, because Beyonce and Jay-Z like her too. She is no less an idol than they are. And all of these idols enjoy, to a large degree, characteristics that their idolaters imagine them to possess when they don't. The ironies of Hillary Clinton are literally mind-boggling. Here is this feminist who has striven to be the most powerful man in the world. Like a Hollywood mogul and his casting couch, she has raped her way to success. Here is this feminist idol who would not be where she is without her man. That Americans over the professional lifetime of these two characters, Hill and Bill, never were ashamed of them, not all but many, that people still come out to ogle him after the episode of the stained blue dress, his perversion in the office of the President of the United States, his impeachment. That makes some kind of a statement about the people in this country at this time. Some of you may remember the quiz show scandals of the 1950s, when a Columbia University professor, Charles Van Doren, son of the famous Professor Mark Van Doren, was caught cheating, fooling the TV audience in a game show. Congressional investigations. Following the scam, Van Doren left Columbia and pretty much disappeared from public view. And I think that after Bill's impeachment, he too should have locked himself away, but he did not. And there are no shortage of fans who went along with his absence of shame. It has become a shameless culture. Hillary is shameless. Formerly cultured people nowadays spew streams of obscenities in their daily speech. I find it simply devastating that in light of all of Hillary's crimes, listed by James Comey last July 5, so many people continue to support her. Comey, too, once thought of as a straight arrow, has dirtied himself, and it's not clear why. What secret does Hillary have about him that she blackmails him with? The corruption is shameless, whose base word shame is, I like to think, from the Hebrew word for name, shem, meaning indirectly in common parlance, God. To be shameless is to have no room in your life for Hashem, for God. a life without Hashem watching over you and wanting to see right behavior, and to experience shame when you don't. In the Russian language, my friends from there tell me, Cham is an insult to call somebody Cham, comparing someone to Cham in the Bible. We just read about him. It's equivalent to the English shameless. It likely comes from that story of Cham, who shamelessly violated his father Noah's dignity, saw him exposed, and then exposed what he saw to his brothers. Maybe what the godless West is now experiencing is something like the decline of humanity that led to the destruction of the world when the great flood washed the entire globe, turned it into a giant global mikveh to wash out its sins. According to Rashi's commentary, the two major sins of man that brought on the flood was, of course, Hamas, unbridled aggression against others, but also, via Rashi's probing of the text, the corruption of all flesh, animals included, who, like humans, disrespected the divisions between them and engaged in interspecies sexual activity. Animals coupled outside their species, and so did man. Bestiality had become the norm. Today in Denmark, and surely other countries in Europe, there are legal brothels where men sex with animals. Bill Clinton, we know, is a predatory animal when it comes to sex, and Hillary, his accomplice, likely a lesbian with her lover, a mutilated Saudi woman, married to a sexual pervert. What a time we live in. Trump has also dirtied himself about sex, as we saw in that vulgar video. It's a society sexually off the rails. We'll be right back. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. Here in Israel, the self-defense against the anti-Jew is a daily affair. Yesterday, two of Prime Minister Netanyahu's top aides, acting National Security Advisor Yaakov Nagel and Yitzhak Molcho, met with France's special envoy to the Middle East, Pierre Vimont, mentioned last webcast, to tell him that Israel will not participate in France's so-called International Peace Conference next month in Paris. Peace will be made, they said, via face-to-face bilateral talks with the Arabians, not via some international kangaroo court. My language, of course. These Europeans can be so obtuse sometimes. It turns out that this International Peace Conference they're organizing for next month will have in its title language calling for the implementation of the two-state solution. In other words, a peace conference in which the conclusion is already determined. And if so, what is the purpose of the conference? Sounds to me just more ritual Jew-bashing. The two-state solution language is like the legendary courtroom question, when did you stop beating your wife? It establishes an unchallenged fact as fact. The two-state solution is an anti-Semitism for driving the Jews from Judea and Samaria that they legally captured in self-defense and, by the way, was recognized as theirs even before then by the League of Nations and later the United Nations that incorporated the mandate into its charter. The two-state solution is a euphemism for driving the Jews from Judea and Samaria as they fled Gaza. And this, too, will be the right thing to do. What Israel might do in December, when this international anti-Israel jamboree opens for business in Paris, is conduct here in Jerusalem a parallel symposium of experts discussing France's rule over Corsica that some Corsicans violently dislike, and propose a solution without the participation of France in the deliberations. Israel's symposium might also focus on Spain's colonial presence in Ceuta and Melilla, those two little colonies on the North African coast. What Israel should do, after, God willing, a Trump victory, is adopt a policy of cleansing the relationship with the Arabs here of all the words, phrases, values, policies, and unspoken assumptions of the failed so-called Oslo peace process, precisely because it did fail. We should have a flood-like cleansing of the situation. The two-state solution is residue of that cancerous time in Jewish history when the Israeli left of Rabin in Paris brought down the Oslo assumptions on the country, and they're still alive and kicking. Israel has to redefine the terms of debate, and that should include throwing out, first of all, the notion of the Palestinian people with rights to an independent nation-state in the middle of the promised land, our promised lands. Jews who accept the existence of such a nation with national rights here are functionally apostate Jews. For trashing the story of Abraham that we will read this Shabbos in Shul, when Hashem commands him to go to a nameless country that God will give to him and his seed. For thousands of years, the Jews believed this land belonged to one people only, and believed that shamelessly. Today, by contrast, Jews are ashamed of their own abuse of the Palestinians, who have their rights to this land. What the invention of the Palestinians did was to reject this essential Jewish belief, and insist that this land belonged to another people, with an identical claim. It's their ancient homeland, too. Yours truly never ceases to be amazed by Jews, and especially Israeli Jews, who call these people Palestinians, oblivious to what they're saying. The Palestinian identity is inseparable from the accusation that the Jews stole Palestine from them. What the peace junkies have been trying to do is persuade the Muslims here to recognize our right to independence in our ancient land, free of their oppression, by going along with the fantasy of a parallel Palestinian nation with a parallel equal right to an independent nation in our ancient homeland. That, of course, can never work, because the pre-existing condition of Islamic Jew hatred never had anything to do with a putatively Paleolithic Palestinian people and Israel's alleged armed robbery of their land. Today we learned of the government's success in persuading Interpol to reject the application for membership by the PA police. I think it would be a lot easier if Israel would do the right thing and deny the existence of such a people and short-circuit all the anti-Israel propaganda based on this anti-Semitic aggression of denying the Jewish people's right to its land given to them by the God of the universe. Okay, next webcast Thursday, oh, it will be a new world. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.